This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show.
Hi there, cowpokes. Welcome to the Dark Depths Corral. You just walked into the go-to place for the modern and legacy formats. I'm your sheriff, Billy Mitchell. And with me, the familiar stranger himself, Michael Mapson. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm okay. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. The wagon got robbed on the way into town this time, like it does every time. That's what happens when you're living here in the old West. Is that good? I need that for an audition. So, was that good? Was that believable?
I don't know what to believe.
Okay. All right. I'll take that as a success. We'll go with that. I should probably change the music too. So instead of like the normal music, it'll be like kind of like weird Western type style. I don't know. Maybe we'll do that. I know we normally like talk about how we've been, how life is going, but we have a lot of recording that we need to do today. We are obviously going to be recording our podcast, which you are obviously listening to now, so you know that. But we are also actually going to be on our friend's podcast as well a little bit later, the Eternal Journal. So definitely go check them out when their episode drops. But we always want to release an episode, try to release an episode every week. So we're going to end up having a relatively shorter episode just to maintain, one, our voices and our sanity, but also to make sure that we still have some things to talk about when we talk to the journals later. So let's jump into our set review of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Can you explain the format again? I know this is a new thing that we're trying still. I think coming to a point where we're pretty happy with it, but can you explain what we're going to do?
So I am a notorious hater of set review podcasts and shows and whatnot. It just feels like a bunch of people saying the same thing every time. So we shamelessly stole this from the Constructed Criticism cast, which shamelessly stole it from, I'm blanking on the name of it, but it was one of their co-hosts' earlier podcast. Where instead of going through a bunch of cards and like talking about this is going to see play, that's going to see play, this could see play, or instead of doing like a top 10 list, we are just going through a couple categories and, you know, saying here's what we like for this one category. So our categories are cards we're hopeful for, sleeper picks, one modern hit, one legacy hit, which it's always a bit of a bigger ask. Our personal favorite, and then our favorite artwork. What Billy doesn't know, because I didn't tell him, is before we go over Outlaws at Thunder Junction, though, we're going to recap how we did for, what was this? Murders at Karlov Manor, and see who won.
I mean, it's not a competition, but
I mean, I'm pretty sure you actually won, so you might want to call it a competition.
It's a competition, so yeah, I mean, I guess we'll look at it. Actually, you know what? I'm actually going to say we might have split the first one. For the hopefuls we talked about, I had Insidious Roots, which actually was a card you had noted as well as a card that would be pretty good in Modern. And then you had Case of the Three Gateway, which I guess doesn't seem particularly playable. Was that the blue case or was that the red case?
Case of the Gateway Express, I believe is the full name, is the white case. Remember specifically saying I wasn't sure if it would make its way into Modern, but it would definitely be a Pioneer hit. And it has been a Pioneer hit. It has not necessarily made that jump to Modern that I would hope, but not too mad about it.
No. Delny, though, has actually been really, really solid, at least in CDH. I'm not sure what other formats it sees play in, but Delny has been very impressive. I've been very happy to see that card whenever it pops up.
So, a point for you, half a point for me. Our sleepers, you picked Illicit Masquerade, I picked Analyze the Pollen. I don't believe either of these cards has really seen play. Analyze the Pollen has seen play in Standard, at least, in the domain decks. Not consistent play, but some amount of play. So I'm going to give myself a quarter of a point and give you nothing, because your card sucks.
That's actually probably fair, yeah. It's definitely not seeing any play, and the fact I can't even remember what the card Illicit Masquerade even does at this point, so that's probably not a good thing.
It's basically like when your board gets wiped, you switch the cards that were in play with like cards in your graveyard.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
It's like if they would die, you...
Well, I guess Modern, I guess you win by default as well. I mean, that's the... you had Chalk Outline in Insidious Roots. Insidious Roots at least see some play in Modern. Not a ton. I played with it a little bit, but I really enjoyed that one. And I had Reenact the Crime, which I still think is a really powerful card. I just have not found a home yet.
Yeah, so Reenact the Crime was really big for like a hot second. I actually tried a couple decks with it. And yeah, it was like okay, but it ended up not staying. I think those decks are kind of just like glass cannon worse versions of the Koryos deck that I've been really high on lately. So I don't know. It was there for a minute, did not pan out, so yeah, we'll give me the point and not you. Moving on to Legacy, you picked Long Goodbye and or Pick Your Poison, and I picked Analyze the Pollen again. I was wrong, but Pick Your Poison, you were like close. It has not been a Legacy hit, but it is the most played card in Modern right now.
That's not surprising. I've been playing a lot of creativity recently, and just like the number of things I've just like picked off, like I play Amulet and I'll go and hit sack your artifact. Oh, that's good. No Amulet of Vigor. Oh, sack your enchantment. Get rid of your Urza Saga. And even like the number of like, you know, Murktides that I've killed and DRCs and like just Pick Your Poison is like multi-format all-star. I've even actually been playing it in Legacy in the Bug Beans deck. It's a really, really nice way to go, you know, obviously eat Murktides, but also eat things like Up the Beanstalk and things like that. So, again, very impressed with Pick Your Poison.
So, favorites. It's hard to be right or wrong on this, but you picked Prisoner's Dilemma.
Yeah.
I don't remember what that card is, and I picked Undergrowth Recon, and embarrassingly, I don't remember what my own favorite card of the set was, so maybe I lied about it being my favorite.
So, Undergrowth Recon, from what I remember, was the one where you would put a land from your graveyard into play tapped at the beginning of each upkeep. That was the enchantment. I believe it was one generic and double green, which I still think the art, that was my favorite art. I think that is still a fantastic piece of art and a really cool card. I actually did see that popping up, I believe, in the 5-0 deck dump, but I could be wrong too. We look at a lot of the deck lists, unfortunately. So, Prisoner's Dilemma was the one that was a psychic experiment on a card, which is super fun. Each opponent chooses I forget what the terms were. It's like snitch or confidant or something like that. And if everyone picks confidant, they like take 2 damage. And if you call snitch, everyone who it's something weird. It's not even worth explaining. You take damage. That's basically all it does. Some weird group game, which I still think is really cool. The art is really fantastic. The favorite art, I had Undergrowth Recon, of course, which has a really cool lens in the picture, and you had the dog token, which I think was a good choice, definitely. If we're counting, or is it? I think you. I think you actually win. I think. Or
maybe no, it's, you, maybe it's like you beat me by 0.25.
Okay. All right. Nice.
So close. I mean, if we round it up, it's a tie, really.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. We both did fantastic.
Hard fought.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure we're going to do much worse in this set. I feel a lot less confident with the cards out of Outlaws of Thunder Junction. I just feel like there's, like, a lot of, like, splashy and interesting cards, but, like, not, like, outright, this is one of the best things you can be doing in Magic now. Figure it out. So I'm excited to see and hear kind of your rationale for some of these cards.
Yeah, I was, you know, looking at the cards earlier today to kind of think about this, and there's definitely a lot of powerful stuff. I'm not necessarily sure where it all fits in. It's funny because I kept hearing people talk about how powerful it was and, like, why would they print this right before Modern? I have to say, I don't really expect this to have too much of an effect on Eternal formats. I think it is definitely a very powerful standard set, but I don't see many of these cards breaking through, although, I am definitely capable of being wrong on that.
Yeah, there's a couple that I could imagine being potentially strong. But again, like, a lot of these cards, they're just, like, kind of weird, mopey 3 or 4 drops, or they're, like, these weird 1 or 2 drops that need, like, additional help, or, like, you need to pay kicker or something like that. So, yeah, I guess let's jump into it. I know that's a rousing recommendation for the first card, but I'm hopeful, and I guess our first card is hopeful. So, I am hopeful about Sitaru the Infiltrator, which I have actually seen people talking about this one too. It's a blue and a black for a 2/3 with menace, human, ninja, rogue, just all the types. When Sitaru the Infiltrator and or one or more other non-token creatures enter the battlefield under your control, if none of them were cast or no mana was spent to cast them, draw a card. Which I think drawing cards is usually pretty good. This being a 2-drop is very nice. The if is the part that I think is interesting, because it's if none of them were cast or no mana was spent to play them, not and, but or. So, like, you doing, like, something like Grief, you are casting it, but you did not spend mana for it, so you still should draw the card there, I believe.
Yeah, and I have to say, Grief, you don't have to pitch a card and then reanimate back the Grief, get to draw a card, seems kind of messed up.
Yes. Yeah, and, like, a lot of these, like, small kind of, like, that's one, too, like, you know, if we're casting something for 0 mana, like, I do like the idea of, like, you know, I Ornithopter, like, Memnite, and, like, that's, like, kind of cute, I guess. But I think the part that actually works really well with something like Ornithopter is that it actually kind of plays into, like, the ninja. So that might be something that potentially actually allows the ninja through deck to actually, you know, have steam in them. Not that I've ever seen a ninja through deck, not at least in Modern, but in Legacy, you know, that is a deck you could play. So I'm interested to see that there. The other one that I'm actually kind of interested in with Sitaru is, this is a throwback for those who love weird cards, Norrin the Wary. So just having that card be coming, like, just flickering itself back into play and out of play. For those who don't remember, Norrin the Wary was a 1 red for a 2/1 creature. I can't remember the set off the top of my head, but it's a 2/1. Whenever a player casts a spell or attacks, you exile Norrin and return him to the battlefield at the end of the nup. So you can just, you know, put that into play and just have it, and then every turn it's going to come back. You're going to draw a card, at least drawing, you know, a card of return. Assuming you or your opponent are casting spells or attacking, it seems like a really sweet value engine. If you're doing it in a multiplayer game, obviously it's very nice to be able to draw multiple cards, but I think that is something that, you know, potentially could be interesting. I don't know if there's anything else that you'd want to do that might be a little bit better color-wise, but I think Sitaru definitely has some possibilities there.
Yeah, I don't know if anything else. I do think the Ninja deck is a good fit for it. Like you said, that's a deck that's already playing Ornithopter, so that's one thing that's triggering it. Also, anytime the Ninjas come in, it triggers it. Plus, it having Menace makes it a good creature to Ninjutsu out. So, I definitely think that's a good home. I'm not sure where else you would play it, but I can definitely see people getting up to some Cheerio shenanigans with it. Just like, you know, play this. Because, you know, the Cheerio stack is a deck that often plays... I mean, not that it's a deck that sees much play, but when it does see play, it often plays something like Glimpse of Nature or Beck and Call. So this is that effect on a creature. It's different colors, so it's curious how that plays out. You know, like, one of the good things about those cards is being green means they play with Gaia's Cradle really well, whereas this doesn't necessarily, but there could definitely be something in that space still.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm interested. This is just it's a cool card. I mean, like, I think a 2-mana 2/3 with Menace is, like, good enough as a failsafe anyways. Like, if that's the floor of this card, I think that's okay. If I mean, I would obviously like to draw a card or two, you know, just for fun. But I think having a 2-mana 2/3 with Menace is the worst stats possible. All right, so I think we're all ninja'd out. What was your pick? I think you had a really good one.
My hopeful is Freeze Rider Lookout. And this is a card that seems like it could be really good in various land-based strategies in Legacy, potentially in Modern too. But it is one of the green rares. It is 2 and a green for a 3/3 with reach, and whenever you commit a crime, which is targeting your opponents, anything, including themselves, look at the top 5 cards of your library, put a land from among them onto the battlefield tapped, the rest on the bottom in a random order. Notably, it does only trigger once each turn. This card seems like it could be really good. Couple downsides, though. First, you know, being a 3 toughness creature, it does die to Lightning Bolt, and while the dies to removal argument is, like, drastically overdone, Lightning Bolt is a notable hurdle, especially when you are paying 3 mana for especially in those decks where typically the rest of your threats don't die to Lightning Bolt, having that kind of reserved for this card is not great. What's nice about it is reach is, like, actually pretty huge in Legacy, but also just, like, you get to wasteland, lock your opponent while actually progressing your game. Like, being able to go, I will wasteland your Volcanic Island, look at the top 5, put this Taiga into play. Okay, next turn, Ramunap Excavator, wasteland you. Okay, put this Thespian Sage into play or whatever. That's huge, because one of the big things with lands is sometimes when you are, like, trying to lock people out, you're not progressing your game state, and then they're able to break free and do stuff. This kind of allows you to do 2 different things at once. So it definitely does have the potential to be really good, but like I said, it might also just prove to be too clunky, so time will tell. I'm hopeful that this card is good. It's very much the kind of card I enjoy playing with, but, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I think that you picked on, like, the Wasteland being a really good interaction piece, and obviously Thespian Stage 2. Like, there's just a lot of lands that have abilities that work well with this. I mean, like, Maze of Ith is another one that comes to mind in terms of something you'd want to be doing anyway. But, like, if that's if the downside, you know, quote-unquote downside of Maze of Ith, that it can't tap mana, but it gets you a land every time that you target one of your opponent's creatures. Like, that's pretty nice. So I definitely like this one as a pick. All right, well, let's talk about sleepers then. I dug through this thing. I found the sleepiest pick I could. And again, I don't know what the line between unplayable and sleeper is. I guess it's potential and hope. There's definitely some cards in here that I am excited to play with in general, you know, especially getting into multicolor cards. But the one I thought would be potentially a sleeper was Doc Orlock Grizzled Genius, which is a green and a blue for a 2/3 bear druid. He has the right to bear arms. But more importantly, spells you cast from your graveyard or from exile cost 2 less to cast, and plotting cards from your hand cost 2 less. Plot is obviously one of the set mechanics in the Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which I do think maybe plotting in general does have some potential. There are some other cards that, you know, we could talk about for plot, but I think the ability to have your spells just cost 2 less is a really nice thing to have. The body of a 2/3 is not the best thing necessarily, but you know, we've seen things like Goblin Electromancer as a 2/2 and Baral as a 1/3, both for 2 mana, be things that were in play that have, you know, effect similar to this, where they are making your things cheaper. Doc Orlock obviously does not do this for instant sorceries. It only does things from your graveyard or exile, but it does things from your graveyard or exile, right? Like, it's not just instant sorceries. I can actually cast, for something like a disturbed creature or something like that, from my graveyard for, you know, 2 less mana, which, you know, could be relevant. It being green, though, makes me think that maybe something like Gaia's Will could be interesting, having those cast 2 less. And also, if we're going to plot cards and they cost 2 less, this also could be something like, I'm going to take a, Wayfarer's Bauble, there we are, which cost 1 anyways, and I'll just plot this for free, I'll cast it for free next turn. It just has to spend 1. Like, there are some things that, most cards, like, you know, Training Grounds, for example, usually says this can't cost, this can't reduce the cost to less than 1. This doesn't have that restriction. So if there are some 2 mana cards that are, you know, playable that allow you to kind of like move through deck pretty quickly, Doc Orlock could be the captain of that ship.
I'm not convinced that this one is going to be good, which I mean makes it a good pick as a sleeper, right? Because people don't agree.
Yeah,
but it's just like, don't think there's that many cards that you are going to play with plotting. And I don't think you're usually casting cards from your graveyard or exile. So I will say, you know, what you brought up with Gaia's, Gaia's Will could definitely be interesting, but I just think it sounds like you're jumping through a lot of hoops just to kind of, you know, get a little bit of cost reduction. Not to say cost reduction isn't good, but it just feels like you're putting a lot of effort in.
Yeah, I mean, it's very possible. I mean, like, the one thing I do, I guess, want to point out, though, is, like, you know, we already have a green-focused artifact deck, right, in terms of the... In Modern, this is, of course, but we already have a green-based artifact deck in Modern that, you know, is playing things like, you know, Arcbound Ravager, it's playing Zabaz, it's playing... what is that card that... We talk about this card all the time that has Ward 2 and... get the 1/1 counter. Yeah, automaton, like, those all cost 2 anyway, so, like, Rick, if the cost is, like, plot. Plotting card, oh, no, it doesn't give them plot, oh, man, plotting cards from your hand cost 2 less, so they have to have plot already, yeah, no, this is awful, take it back, sorry, internet.
Yeah, I mean,
it's living in for me.
If it gave things plot, then I'd be much higher on it.
Yeah, I would be, too. the costing 2 less is not bad, obviously, but that is, kind of disappointed.
Well,
so that brings me to my actual pick, Lila, Undefeated Slick Shot. No, I guess I'll stick with the Doc. Yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah, I guess we are very locked in on the graveyard, so Gaia's Will would be the big thing. I don't know if there's anything in blue that you necessarily cast from exiles and graveyards. I mean, Flashback is the big thing I'm thinking of that might be relevant, but I can't think of anything else.
Deep analysis is good, though.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. All right, did you have a sleeper you wanted to talk about?
I
just want to move into the moderns.
I do not have a sleeper. I feel like people have been very high in the set as a whole. It seems like people are excited about
basically every card. So yeah, I couldn't come up with one. I'm sorry.
That's good. That's good. I mean, like, I was gonna say, if you want me to give you a sleeper, I've got a couple other backup ones.
Nope.
But you know, we don't have to. We can just jump into the
Archmage's Newt can be my sleeper. Because I'm excited for it. I don't actually think it's terrific, but I think it will show up in Legacy deck dumps for like the first, not the first day, but I think it will show up within the first month at least twice.
But Archmage's Newt, that was the 2/2, right?
So it's a 2/2 with no evasion, and it does have Saddle 3, which is basically Sorcery Speed Crew. Although it is always a creature. And when it deals combat damage to a player, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. If you have saddled the Newt, then the flashback cost is 0 instead of its mana cost. So there's like some cute stuff you could do with this card, right? Like on the one hand, you could just use it in like a tempo-y blue-red spells deck, you know. It's very reminiscent of Dreadhorde Arcanist. I'm not saying it's as good, to be clear. I think this card is way worse. But, you know, similar vibe to that, or, you know, your Mercurial Spell Dancer or whatever else. But there's some, like, cute over-the-top stuff you could do with, like, Faithless Looting, put something big into your graveyard, saddle this, attack, get that effect for free, or, like, entomb something into your yard. Like, could you imagine just, like, entombing a Magma Opus or whatever? Magma
Opus.
Attacking and getting that for free. Like, that's a huge effect.
That would be nice.
But the fact that this card has zero evasion makes it very difficult.
Yeah, 2/2s do not normally survive, let alone deal combat damage. But, I mean, it definitely could. I guess you'd have to, like, really build the deck around it, which I'm not sure if the effect is like powerful enough for that, but I think you're right though. I think people are going to try to do this at least for the first couple weeks. Well, let's move to modern then. What was your modern pick?
So my modern pick is Trash the Town. So Trash the Town is a green card. It costs 1 green. But it is a spree card, meaning that there are kind of different modes, essentially, and you have to pick at least one. So you can pay 2 extra to put +2/+1/+1 counters on target creature. I think you're almost never choosing this. I just realized I put the wrong card. This is not the card I was thinking of.
Oh, really?
No, there's a different green spree card. I wanted the one right above it on Mythic Spoiler. Smuggler's
Surprise? Yes.
Sorry about that. It also costs 1 green and has spree. It has 3 modes I do think are relevant. For 2 mana, you can mill 4 cards, and you can put up to 2 creature and or land cards from among the milled cards in your hand. For 4 and a green, you can put up to 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield, and for 1, creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. So this does, like, a number of things, right? For 3 mana, it's kind of an overcosted effect to kind of get you through the top few cards of your deck and hopefully find what you need. You know, we have seen people cast things like Once Upon a Time when they're not getting it for free, and things like what is that green card? Adventurous Impulse? Is that the right one? You know, those were cards that are never, like, no one's ever excited to cast them, but, you know, they do serve a function, and like, you know, in the case of Once Upon a Time, when you get it for free, like, the upside is so high that it's okay to have kind of a clunky card in your deck later. For if you pay the middle cost, so the 4 and a green, making it cost at least 6, you kind of get like half of a tooth and nail. Getting to put 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield is a very strong effect. You know, for 6 mana, you could just cast a Primeval Titan, or though, for 6 mana, you could put 2 Primeval Titans into play. And you may be thinking, like, okay, well, we're already not doing this with Tooth and Nail, but Tooth and Nail normally costs 7, so 6 is 1 cheaper, and, like, that can be a big difference. And you could be thinking, well, Through the Breach is 5, which is even cheaper. That is true, but I think being in green, you have an easier time playing creatures that you can actually just cast. Like, in the red decks, you just play things like Emrakul, which you're never casting, but, like, since you're in green, I think you can just play fatties that are good enough. And the fact that you don't have to sacrifice the creature at end of turn is, like, really strong. Another thing that's nice about green is the color of Veil of Summer, so you also have protection in the same color. And again, we're getting into, that's a lot of mana, but, like, if on your end step I just get to go, okay, Smuggler's Surprise, you might have Counterspell, and then I fail it, and then I get to untap, and this creature's around forever, plus, like, I untap with all my mana, like, I'm in a really good spot. And then, honestly, even just, like, paying 2 mana sometimes to give your big creatures Hexproof and Indestructible, like, a lot of times you will lose games to, like, Blue-White Control, where you might make a Titan or 2, but can't do anything with it really because they have the One Ring, and then they just untap and Supreme Verdict you. But if you, like, make a Titan and then they untap and Verdict, and you're just like, okay, it's indestructible, untap, kill you, like, that is incredibly strong.
Yeah, and, like, the Hexproof also, I don't think is anything to sneeze at. Like, that is a card that's protecting you from a lot of the really efficient removal spells we have in this format, including Leyline Binding. Like, I'm really happy to have something like that for protection for my big creatures.
Yeah. So, I guess, really, like, the thing about this card is all of these effects are perhaps maybe, like, a mana overcosted for what they are, but just, like, they're all good. So, just, like, having the versatility is huge.
Yeah, and honestly, like, if it's a 3-mana draw 2, you know, in your deck, essentially, you know, mill 4, and I'll get a creature, well, I guess you can get up to 2 creatures or 2 lands, or you can get some combination of 2, right? Like, I think that's a pretty solid rate already, especially if you're playing a deck like Amulet that's so land heavy and, you know, is basically just lands and creatures already. Like, that just seems like an automatic thing. It also has some interesting synergies if you're talking about playing something like Dredge or something like that in Modern. That could be a possibility. But I also do like the idea that this is an instant, so this could very much be an end of turn. I'm going to try to put these creatures into play, untap, I'll try it again with another spell. That is definitely some flexibility I'm happy to see.
I'm really excited to see what people do with this.
I'm actually pretty excited to look at the new mayor, if you have not met him already. He's kind of a jerk, but he does some cool stuff. Kambal, Profiteering Mayor, 1 generic, a white, and a black for a 2/4 human advisor. So he passes the lightning bolt test, which is relevant. If whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your control, or under your opponent's control, for each of them, create a tap token that's a copy of it. So this, which I think is kind of funny, but, like, if they decide they're going to make a treasure, you get a treasure, which, again, it feels like one of those things that's not super relevant, but, like, there's a lot of, like, weird tokens that you end up seeing, you know, in Modern and Legacy, that this could be, you know, a construct token you're getting from your opponent, or maybe they're going to go and make a, you know, they're making a food from their Samwise Gamgee or something like that. Like, there's a lot of, like, weird tokens that you end up getting access to from Kambal, which I think is relevant. But the second ability is actually the one that I think is really noteworthy. Whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. This is actually just a really clean way to end the game if you actually are playing the Samwise Gamgee deck. And legendary, so it's something that actually Samwise gets back, because it gets it back historic cards. You typically have the surplus of, like, I can make treasures, and I can make food, and I can make whatever with my, Academy Manufacturer, or, you know, potentially even in a deck with
Asmo, right? I'm going to make all these food tokens, but I have nothing to do with them. Like, this actually will just kill your opponent eventually. So I'm interested to see if this actually ends up getting any ground. I don't think you need to be playing, like, four of them, but, like, this could be a very easy, like, one of, you know, allows you to close out some games you normally wouldn't be able to.
I know we're talking about Modern, but I also think this could be pretty funny in CDH if your opponent just plays, like, a Dockside Extortionist, and you're like, I will also make 10, and now you stupid ad nauseum players have 10 less life to work with.
Yeah, that's silly, too. It's just really good. I don't know. And again, like, treasures coming in tapped or whatever, like, that's unfortunate, but, like, if I untap, I get 10 treasures is a good proposition I'm willing to bet on.
Do you remember the black-white token decks?
I do, yeah. Those were pretty good back in the day. I mean, they had, like, a natural, like, defense against, like, Death Shadow, which was, like, a very popular deck at the time. And I think you still would be able to play something like that if you wanted to. Being able to, like, make these tokens, and especially the one part that's kind of annoying is that it is whenever one or more tokens enter the battlefield. So it's not like they lose one for each of it. That would be, like, the Murkwood Bat. But, like, still, like, that deck was able to put in tokens periodically throughout the game. Anyway, so, like, if that's going to be, like, the drain effect you're getting, I think that's fine. There also are a number of, like, those haunted... I don't know if you remember the haunted cycle, right? There was, like, the haunted horror and haunted... I forget what the white one was called. My brain says, like, haunted Lamuth, so correct. But there are some cards in... black or white that do give your opponent tokens. So to be able to give your opponent a token that you end up actually just getting a copy of, like in the, I actually forget, Haunted Horror, I think gives you like, I think it has pro green and it gives you like, gives your opponent like 2/3/3 centaurs or something. It gives them like that is
3/1/1s.
Is it 3/1/1s? I mean, whatever that card is, right? Like, That is definitely something that, like, I would not mind getting. I know there's a white card. I'm just, like, naming a bunch of cards that I've seen in the world, so I apologize ahead of time. I know there's a card that, like, exiles a opposing creature, and, like, they get a 4/4 elemental, or they get an angel, or, you know, whatever. A lot of those types of effects have been more popular. There's actually a card in the set. Destroy, I think it's a white card. It's, like, destroy target creature. They get a... like a 2/2 oxen or something like that. Instead, like a bovine intervention. Yeah, you're right. So they get a 2/2 ox. But like, you know, if the downside that is that they get an ox, but like you also get an ox, that seems sweet. And there's a bunch of other cards similar to that, you know, Raven Form or whatever. That might be a good, you know, a good supplement to something like that. I think it kind of changes your removal a little bit, but I don't know. I think that could be a card that in 3 months or something like that, we're not surprised to see it in a sideboard.
So, moving on to your legacy hit, you have Pest Control.
Yeah, which is a card I did not realize existed until, I think, much later. Pest Control is... one of those cards that I don't even want to say seems underwhelming, but it is a card that, like, does a lot for much less than I feel like it should. It's one of the cards from the Big Score set, you know, that subset, I guess, of cards. It is a black and a white, so a lot of black and white cards for me. A black and a white for a sorcery. It destroy all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less. I think that by itself, I think, is worthwhile. I think there's a lot of one mana artifacts and one mana enchantments and things like that that we are more than happy to kill, whether that's like something and again, I'm just like listing things that I'm familiar with. It could be just tokens in general, it could be a Chalice of the Void, but it also might just be like something like a bunch of like goblin tokens, or maybe we're talking about blowing up an LED or a chrome box or something like that. Like, there's a lot of really small, efficient things that people are trying to play on turn one turn two. And, like, I'm not going to be upset if I destroy three of my opponent's food tokens and hit their one cookbook or something like that as well. Like, there's a lot of, like, really nice things you can do with an effect like this. But also, worst case scenario, this card also has cycling. So you can just cycle it away, and I think that's just a big upside.
This card is kind of nutty. Yeah, it's just very, very good.
Yeah. Like, I know we had, like, Hidzuku Consumes All, which is a card I was never really impressed with. I think it just, it hits similar notes. It exiles, that one exiles instead, this one destroys, so I'm sure there are some niche scenarios that I'm forgetting about, but, like, usually destroying one or less is going to be fine, and being two mana instead of three mana is also fine, and this actually doesn't hit your own graveyard, which was kind of awkward in those Hidzuku Consumes All, because, like, you can't play that with Uro, you can't play that with Rakdos or Murktide Regen or something like that. Like, Pest Control is more than happy to play with all those big graveyard-centric cards, so a little more flexible. In
somebody who has lost to Hidetsugo who Consumes All plenty of times, I will tell you, I have been impressed by that card, but I am still impressed by this card as well.
Yeah, I mean, the part with Hidetsugo in general that I'm usually more impressed with, I mean, obviously the exile is the big thing, just being like, oh, there goes my two Delver Secrets, that's unfortunate. But, like, this also kills the Delver of Secrets, which is good. The creature on the backside, like, I don't know if the one mana and, you know, I get a 2-2 that doesn't have haste. I don't know if that part was the part I was really happy to play with this. And obviously this is just, like, mode one of that card. But I also feel like black and white's a better support color than black and red is. Obviously, like, I guess I'm happy to be playing Lightning Bolt, but this coming off of, like, a Teferi seems super backbreaking, especially if you're playing something like Goblins or something like that comes to mind, but playing against something like, I believe in myself, I can think of the name of this card, this deck, this lifestyle. It's the blue... I literally cannot think... Just Delver. We'll just say Delver. It kills all the Delvers. It kills all the DRCs. It makes them use their baubles. They can... It can kill opposing... Oh my goodness. This is... it's gonna be a long day. It's gonna be a long day for us, I think. It also kills, like, orc tokens and things like that. It's just good. I don't know. What was your legacy card?
Mine is Giroth the Fleshrite. As somebody who struggles with autocorrect issues and typos, definitely never typing this full name online. But anyways, this is three mana for a two and a blue for a 2/3 legendary human warlock. And when you cast a spell during your turn, other than the first spell that turn, you create a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature token. So already giving, you know, reminiscent of, like, Young Pyromancer or Monastery Mentor vibes, notably 2/2s rather than 1/1s. And notably, it's any spell, does not say non-creature spell, just, you know, you can play your creatures, you can play a second one of this. I mean, it'll die, but
still.
So anything will generate that. And then whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. So, you know, it's different than Prowess, like the monk tokens from Monastery Mentor have, but it is kind of a similar effect in that they will grow, and unlike the Mentor tokens, they will stay grown, although they don't all grow evenly, so, like, I don't know. It's hard to know which is better because it really depends on the circumstance. But yeah, this is very similar to Mentor. And one huge difference is that this card is blue. So it pitches to Force Will, which is probably good because, it is legendary. So you can't play two of them and kind of go off. But you never really needed two mentors anyways, I feel like.
No, yeah, the second one's usually support, just extra. I think this card is really interesting. I mean, like, and again, like, this card is made with the intention that, like, you know, you're going to be casting things with plot, and I'll have, you know, three mana on turn three, I'll play Giraffe, I'll finally cast that thing I plotted the previous turn, and I get a 2/2 zombie, and it's like, yeah, but what if I just cast a bunch of efficient cantrips and baubles and things like that, and I just, like, made, like, you could very, I could imagine very easily just going, like, turn, we'll say turn three Giraffe into a bauble, I'll get a 2/2, the next turn, just like, here's another bauble, here's a ponder, here's a preordain, and I'm going to murderous cut your creature, let me get my 2/2, my 3/3, and my 4/4. Go. Like, that seems really nice. And again, the fact they don't have to, you don't have to worry about them getting cleaned up by, like, weird small and efficient spells or whatever. It's really good. I think this card's really sweet.
One downside I will point out is, you know, it does have three toughness, and unlike Mentor, you cannot grow it out of bolt range. But, you know, just like Mentor, you can play it and immediately get value out of it. So, I mean, even though it dies to a bolt, like, getting a 2/2 out of it, yes, that's not what you want to do for your three mana, but it's not, like, the end of the world. And, you know, again, you're in a blue deck, so you might have Daze, you might have Farce of Will, Spell Pierce, like, any number of effects. And especially, you know, if you're playing this in a cantrip heavy deck, like, maybe you're in a control deck. Does your opponent even still have four lightning bolts in post board? Maybe, but maybe not. You know, you never know.
Also, can we just for the CEDH people out in the crowd, I see you in the back. You could also just go, like, Gravecrawler and Phyrexian Altar, stack Gravecrawler over and over and over and over again, and I'm just in a 5/5. Like, if you can find a loop that allows you to cast these spells during your turn, you can just make a ton of zombies. And I get, again, Gravecrawler and Phyrexian Altar is the one that comes to mind first, just because I'm used to it, literally see the word zombie on here. But, like, if you also manage to play, if you want to, I guess, do the Gravecrawler thing, like, that allows you to kind of backdoor into, like, a Altar of Dementia kill or something like that, where, you know, I have these infinitely large creatures already, I might as well just start milling you that way. So there definitely are some other combo potentials for this card.
That's very sweet. So, speaking of sweet cards, what is your favorite card in the set?
My favorite is, so it's some combination between efficiency and actual, like, just, like, flavor. I really, really love Shoot the Sheriff. I think the card is awesome. If you haven't seen Shoot the Sheriff, it has arguably the best flavor text best flavor text and reminder text of all time. It is a one generic and a black for an instant. Destroy target non-outlaw creature, which, again, is one of the set mechanics, outlaws. Outlaws, for those who don't know already, are assassins, mercenaries, pirates, and rogues, and warlocks. So I guess I should just read the flavor, the reminder text. Assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are outlaws. Everyone else is fair game. Which is a really cool thing to see on a Magic card. But again, the flavor text here, now where is that deputy? I think it's a really good follow-up to the card named Shoot the Sheriff. I think this card obviously is, I think it's just playable, just in general. Like, I know we're seeing people playing things like Go for the Throat in certain formats, just as a efficient removal spell, hits most things you're concerned about. I don't know about the numbers, but I feel like there are probably more creatures that are legendary or that are artifacts than there are creatures that are non-outlaws. I could be wrong, too, obviously, but I can't really think of any outlaw creatures that I would want to kill that I see a lot of play. I mean, like,
Ragavan.
The one, Ragavan's the big one that comes to mind. Yeah, I think that's the one thing, but I don't know what else hits that category. There's just not a lot of assassins, mercenaries, and warlocks anyways. I mean, there's a couple for sure, but
Pirates and Rogues are the ones that I think you'd have to watch out for, but I think you have a really clear shot in a lot of these situations. So, a lot of fair games.
The card is very good, and I agree with you that the text on it is just all around amazing.
What was your favorite card from this set?
My favorite card was Roxanne. Let me remind myself, what is her full name? Roxanne Starfall Savant. It costs 3 red and a green. First, the name makes me want to sing the song, so that makes me happy. It's a legendary creature. It's a cat druid. You know, I do like this heart. I will say I'm more of a dog person than a cat person, but I'll let it slide. And so when Roxanne enters or attacks, you create a tapped colorless artifact token named Meteorite. With when Meteorite enters the battlefield, it deals 2 damage to any target, and you can tap it for 1 mana of any color. Whenever you tap an artifact token for mana, add 1 mana of any type that artifact token produced. This card just does a lot of things I like. First, it is a Green Sun Zenithable answer or Summoner's Pactable answer for Magus of the Moon. I'm not saying that this is the best answer for those cards, but it is an answer. I think Meteorites are cool, even though I never play with them. They are not a new thing. And I don't know, red-green cards that deal with artifacts, like, I tried so hard to break Myria, and I didn't quite succeed. And I feel like this card has also piqued my interest. And I don't know if I'll ever play with it. Honestly, by the time the next set comes out, I probably won't remember this card exists. But, you know, looking through the set, it was one that spoke to me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting card. I mean, the one thing that I'm, like, less enthused about is that, like, when I think of artifact tokens creating mana, I think of the Power Stones, which don't, the only tap for artifacts, which is kind of annoying. But I love Meteorites. I think Meteorites, 2 damage is one of those things where it's just enough to be super annoying. Like, 3 would be, I think, like, overly broken. But 2 damage is kind of the sweet spot where it's going to be able to knock out a lot of stuff. It makes, you know, combat and blocking a little awkward for people. And the fact that it's adding mana consistently, I think, is really huge. I don't know, are there any other, like, artifact tokens that add mana regularly? I'm trying to think.
Treasures.
Oh my gosh, yeah, those things. Yeah. Oh wow, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay, cool, so it doubles up the treasure. So at least, at the very least, it's like a Goldspan Dragon, which is, again, not a bad plea. Okay. Cool, I can see that, I like that. Also, that art is fantastic. That card.
It was close to winning my favorite artwork.
Getting your favorite artwork.
This feels like such a boring answer, but Basic Island.
Oh, okay. I mean, are you talking about, like, the islands that have, like, or the basic lands that have, like, the cloud symbols in them?
Yeah, the full art ones. It doesn't have a cloud, but it's just like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just like a scene where there's just like natural rock formations and then there's like water spouting out of them. And it just looks like it would be a cool sight to see. The plains has the cloud, which I do like the cloud as well. Actually, the entire cycle is pretty sweet. The mountain, I guess, also has clouds. The swamp is also really nice. The swamp is my next favorite after the island. Sadly, the forest is my least favorite.
But the forest is just hard to see the symbol. And that's like for those who don't know this, by the way, your brain is very good at looking at things that protrude, but not things that are hidden, which is the reason why, like, when you're looking at those, like, hidden picture things, like, those are challenging because your eyes don't naturally do that. So, like, the clouds, so I'm just going through the plains has a cloud, which is very obvious, and it's right there in front of you. The island is that rock formation juts out. The swamp is one that is actually kind of, I guess, hidden, but it's so obvious that it's there that it's really easy to see. The mountain kind of blends into the background just with the colors, but once you, if you looked at it in black and white, you would very obviously see the symbol there. The forest is just harder to see, and it's like a combination of like five different features here, including something that's in the foreground that's like very, very close to the camera. So it's just really hard to see that there is actually the mana symbol there. But I do like the forest too. I think they're all, the whole cycle as a whole, I think is fantastic, like you mentioned. But that's definitely my least favorite as well.
Yep. What is yours?
Mine is a weird card, and it looks like it's not in the main set. I think it's only in, let me down to this. I think it's in, I thought it was in the big score, but now I'm not sure about anything anymore. It's, if I can find it, it's a Gonti Canny Inquisitor, which is a card. Yeah, it's in one of the commander sets. It is a 5 mana. It's 2 generic for a 5/5 Aetherborn Rogue. Spells you cast but don't own cost 1 less to cast. Whenever one or more creatures you control, deal combat damage to a player, look at the top card of that player's library, then exile it face down. You may cast that card for as long as it remains exiled, and mana can be of any type can be spent for that spell. I don't know how good it is. I'm not even worried about that. The art looks really, really cool. It's like Gonti standing over like a, it looks like a pile of gold, just like, you know, ready to collect. But also, I think Gonti's a really cool character. And just in case those who don't know, the Aetherborns have a very limited life cycle, and they will just die, you know. So I actually thought Gonti was dead. It was a part of the reason why I like this art so much. Seeing Gonti alive and well, and, you know, looking like a villain in the Wild West seems like a really cool come up.
Gonti does look really cool here. Looks like a Marvel villain to me.
Oh my god, yeah, like a Doctor Doom kind of energy. Yeah, I'm on board. I love it. All right. I would like to keep talking to you, but I'm going to talk to you in like another hour, so we should really wrap up here. I guess, Mavson, where can people find you?
You can find me this weekend slinging spells at us. Spells at the Squirrel. I blanked on the name for a second. Ha, bad advertiser. But definitely, if you are in the Philly area, please check out this event. A good friend of ours is running it. He's put a lot of love and effort into this event. Really love it if it was a success. It will be proxy-friendly Legacy. You have the chance to come out and I'm going to be playing, I think, a bit of a meme deck, so you have the chance to beat me. You can try to beat Billy as well. It'll be great fun had by all, so definitely come out to that. I can be found there, and you can find that online at spicerack.gg/squirrel. And you can also find me on Twitter at ExpeditionMap. Where can people find you?
Interested in finding me? I am at BadLuckBend on Twitter. If you're interested in finding the show, we are at Depth_podcast on Twitter as well. All the links, all the cool things you see us doing can be found on Twitter, so definitely a good place to find us. You can also support us on Patreon if you want to be a lovely supporter who we love very much. We hope if you are going to be opening product this upcoming weekend that you pick your favorite card. Whatever your favorite card is, I hope you open it. I guess I'll see you next week. All right, bye.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the scene sees reclaim. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the plains. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mavson on the microphone. Dripping in mock diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in the forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red liquor every night's crush against death shadow. On the legendary lake covered in ice and snow, underneath the surface looks a lonely evening. evil. An avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward, going for the kill. But Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. Its stubborn denials compile a stack so thick. The bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't seek forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dread Arbor saw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.